Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Prunaktu, Saha Viryankaravavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mahavishvahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. So we're working on Panchadashi, Chapter 1. This section is a section on Ananda, starting with verse 8 of Chapter 1. So if you have Panchadashi, please get it. Otherwise, I'll be explaining it. So it's more just an unfoldment, kind of like a satsang. I wouldn't worry much about it if you don't have the book. When I get back and we have class next Sunday, we'll be doing, whenever we have whenever we have class in Berkeley, we'll be doing Mandukya Upanishad. When we have class at the farm, then I'll either be doing satsang or some section of a text.
Iyam atma paranandaha paraprema-spadam yataha Parapremaspadam yataha mam nabhuvam nabhuyasam manabhuvam hibhuyasam iti premaatmanikshate iti premaatmanikshate.
This is a little logic for the nature of the self being ananda. So it says, iyam atma, this self is paranandaha. It is the supreme ananda. This we worked on last week, this particular verse. Iyam atma paranandaha. It's iyam atma, this atma, this self, is supreme ananda. It means there's no greater ananda than this self. Why? Para premaspadam yataha. Because it is the aspada, because of it being the locus of supreme love, meaning that there is nothing that is more loved than yourself. In fact, the love for all other beings, as we'll see in a few verses from here, the love that we experience for all other beings is really the love for myself. Because these beings or these situations make me happy, therefore they are loved. And so really, the greatest love is for myself, not for the other. Because if the other makes me unhappy, then that love for that person isn't manifest at that time. What's manifest at that time is pain and all types of other negative emotions for that person, because that person is no longer a vehicle for my ananda, for my experience of ananda. So that means that when that's the case across the board, really, the ananda, that the source of the thing that I'm most attached to is my own being, is my own happiness. So any happiness for the other is really happiness for is attachment for my own happiness. So iyam atma paranandaha paraprema-spadam yataha. Yataha means because. Then he gives another logic for that, myself being the parananda. Mana bhuvam. That's a double negative. May I never not be. And then he indeed bhuyasam. May I continue to be. May I go on being. May I live for another day. May I never not be. And may I go on. May I continue being. So iti, if you were miserable, or if it was dukkha, sorrow, suffering, are things that we want to end. We want to bring that to an end. Ananda is something we don't want to bring to an end. And so since for my own relationship to myself is may I never not be, may I always continue to be, that means that for me, myself is the locus of ananda. It's the greatest locus of ananda. You can say, well, what about people who kill themselves? Well, people who kill themselves are killing their misery. In other words, like, for instance, in depression, clinical depression, one of the problems with that and why people do take their own life in that case is because one of one of the symptoms, clinical symptoms of clinical depression, means if you look it up on the DSM manual, you'll see this list of symptoms. One of the symptoms is that they can see no way of getting out of this condition. When they look into the future, that's all they see. They can't jump over it. They don't have that capacity when that depression is in full bloom. They don't have the capacity to see around it or to have an observing ego that can say something like, well, this is how it is now, but it won't last forever. That's gone. So in depression, where they have no experience of ananda, in depression, there's no experience of ananda, nor do they see any way out of it. Another way of saying that, when you say there's no experience of ananda, of love, of fullness, there is no experience of yourself. You know, the darkness in the mind is so much, you know, that they can't have there's no light shining through. So there's no sense of self there. There's no sense of ananda, nor can they look into the future to see a sense of ananda. And so in a person, many people who have clinical depression kill themselves. Because we could all bear that if we knew that it was temporary. But when you take away that, it's not temporary, then life's not really worth living. Because you are not so dear to yourself. You're there. Yourself isn't there. Mm-hmm. Right? You're just in darkness. So that's, people sometimes don't understand that, you know, and people don't kill themselves. That's a pretty radical thing to do. You're killing yourself, it means that there is no way out for you. And some of these, schizophrenia is another one where there's a lot of suicide. Because in a state of schizophrenia, the observing ego has gotten lost inside the mind. You know? The ahankara is now no longer an ahankara of this body, mind, sense organs, person. It's been swallowed, the ahankara itself has been swallowed into the, really swallowed into the imaginal world of the unconscious, and is now walking around in there. It's almost as though the conscious mind has been swallowed by the unconscious, right? And it can't find its way out. Yeah? And so now it's living within this very, for it, extremely real, illusionary world. And there's no way to, they can't find their way back. Find their way back, the ahankara, the consciousness, the conscious mind, the citta, would have to somehow be able to break out of what has consumed it. So we say it's caused by chemistry and all of these things, but whatever it's caused by, it's extraordinarily painful. And when a person first goes into that state of schizophrenia, they're terrified because it's happened to them, and the day before they were fine, you know what I mean? And then this happens to them, they have no way to get out. And then after a while, as time passes, then they become kind of used to being in this state. They're just consumed in that state. But a lot of times, that state's a very, very painful state. So there's no buddhi. There's no observing ego, there's no buddhi, there's no one there that can handle it. The one that could handle it has been swallowed. Mm-hmm. See what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so when we say, well, why does a person commit suicide if their self is the most dear? Well, it's because there is no relationship with that self at all. The mind has been damaged. It's been very badly damaged. So you have to look at these things as serious, as illness. You know, serious illness. It's not that people just kill themselves because they feel like it. Yeah. It also shows the terror of pain. The way it's like, I would rather would do anything to get rid of this pain. There's a secret message in there also. I would do anything to get rid of this pain. Right? So in a way, they're killing off the pain. Yeah. Anyway, it's called complex, but it's worth kind of understanding what's going on there. A lot of different things are going on, but it's not. It has to do with not being able to tolerate endless suffering. So, and I would rather die than tolerate endless suffering, that type of thing. So, we're saying that because this question always comes up in the satsang. So, ma na bhuvam hi bhuyasam. Let me not be. Let me always continue to be. That's when I'm present. Even with ajnanam, but I am still present. There's nothing more dear than me. I'm the last. I'm the one that wants to continue. I'll give up anything to just continue. Okay. So then it says, let's go to this next verse as the logic continues. Tat prema 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 tat pr He says, that love, the prema, that is anyatra, the love that we have for another person, for another anyatra, the love that we, this prema, love, governs the locative case, just for Sanskrit people, it governs the locative. So anya means another. Anyatra, that tra is an indeclinable affix, it means in another. So the prema, the love we have in another, the love we place in another, that's how they say it in Sanskrit. So that love that we have in another, atmartam, is for the sake of the self. The love that we have for another is for my sake. Na evam anyartam atmani, not in the same manner. The love we have in the self is for the sake of another. If the love that we have for myself is for the sake of another, no. The love that we have for another is for the sake of myself. Okay. So he says, attaha, therefore, that is paramam. It is that love that is paramam. Tena, therefore, paramaman, therefore, this speaks to, that tena, this speaks to, the paraman and the ta, atmanaha, the nature of supreme love for the self.
So, in the English translation here, it says, others are loved for the sake of the self, and it has capitalized self. So, is that...
I wouldn't capitalize it.
Yeah, it's wrong, right. It's for the sake of me as a personality, not for the sake of Atman.
Right. It would say like this, yeah, it always is going to be the Atma, but it's all, you don't know that.
Right.
Yeah, that's
it
right.
It all really is, but I don't know that. First, I think it's for... I love Jackie for Jackie, but really I'm loving Jackie for David, but really I'm loving Jackie / David for the true self that I am. I just don't know.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's one other little thing that we can say. Like, I love this person for my own sake, right? Because this person makes my own nature come more to the forefront. You see what I mean? That's so... amazing. Mm. It makes the ananda of my being come more to the forefront. Mm-hmm. So there's ajnanam there, but there's also, it brings forward, you know, the wholeness of myself.
So I illusionarily think that the happiness is there, but it's actually exposing my own happiness
and
then I feel great.
That's right, because this person, another, just to take another little logical step there, the love for the other, why I have that other love for the other, it's because they're actually giving me a shantavritti. And in that shantavritti, myself, the shantavritti is resonates with my own being. Right? And so that's really what's happening. Now if that person becomes belligerent in some way, you know, is rejecting of me in some way, then They're no longer giving me a shantavritti. Now they're giving me some form of agitation, which does not resonate with me. And so now I feel very kind of uncomfortable. And then in the same way that I love that person for giving me the shantavritti, now I feel negative toward that person or hurt by that person, etc., for giving me the agitated vritti. Because the agitated vritti, the thing is, the agitated vritti, it does not resonate with me. And since I haven't differentiated me from the agitated vritti, it's all jumbled up, you know? Whereas, actually the me is ever-present. That's where for a jnani, whether it's a shantavritti or not a shantavritti, it just really doesn't matter that much. Because I'm always awake to my own presence. That's ajnanam is gone. And so that anyonya adyasa, that mutual superimposition, is not taking place. So I mean, so if my mind is dull or tired or cranky or happy or shantavritti or not a shantavritti, it doesn't really mean very much to me, because my being is always the same. And that's been differentiated for ajnani, that home, that sharanagati. It's called that sharanagati, is that place of refuge, right? That's just not there. It's not there because it's totally consumed by the nature of the vritti, because it's never been differentiated, and you take it completely for granted because you're always there. So then you're either happy or agitated or sad or whatever the vritti is, that's it. But the me is always there, and it's always only seen through the lens of the vritti. See what I mean? So that's why, I mean, the illusion is so grand. It's an incredible illusion. And we don't say, we don't know this. I love you, because you make me so happy. What I really mean is, I love you because you're giving me this wonderful, this shantavritti that allows my, that resonates with my being, so it allows me, you know, to just be unencumbered myself. We don't say that, we don't know that. All we know is that we feel happy. That's all we know. We don't know any of these dynamics at all. Nobody says, oh, you give me a shantavritti. You know, you just say, you make me happy. I'm so happy to be with you, you know. I used to be so happy to be with you, and now... now look at what's happened to us. Ruined. You know, one, just to talk a little bit more about this, one huge relief, not only about being a jnani, then you can, if a person doesn't have knowledge, they have knowledge, it doesn't really matter, you know, because your being is not dependent on whether they have knowledge or whether it's just not dependent on anything, you know. But the thing is, when jnanis are together, you know, it's kind of like a tribe, because you grant each other so much room, because we know who each other is. And we also know the mityatva of the mind. Like, say your mind's all falling apart and going crazy. You know, it's just like a storm cloud. That's why, you know, Bhagya Shananda, he'll just say, it's a really stormy weather out. It's a stormy weather. That's all. It's just weather. It's nothing but weather. The weather can block the sun as though, but it's only weather. And so when you really know that about the other. Now the thing is, when jnanis are together, then it's a two-way street. When you're just with a jnani, then the jnani knows the weather, but it's only weather, but you don't. Mm-hmm. Right? So there's something very kind of sweet about giving each other that space. Yeah? Or knowing the truth of the whole thing. And knowing who the other person is. I mean, you know intimately who the other person is, because they're you. It's not like you have to look at the other person and try to see you in them. Yourself is not objectifiable to look at. It's just as you have gained clarity, you know that this me, the me that is me, is the me that is you. It's not about looking into your eyes to see me. It's about knowledge. The knowledge that this me that I am is you. And his little one. Get it. Yeah, there they are. They're little me's. They're all only me.
Oh, we're talking about.
It's just so, so nice that the mind, your mind gets used to just as a habit, habitually, just going home, staying home, and from this place of yourself, experiencing the world. So what I was trying to say in the meditation based upon these verses, all of the experiences, as you gain clarity, all of the experiences inside and out come directly to you. You are the, you, which is true anyway, right? That's the truth anyway. But now there's no intermediary. There's no ajnanam. There's no ahankara that thinks that I depend upon this and I depend upon that, that has something to say about everything. That intermediary person born of ajnanam isn't there. That's when I said, you know, when your heart is as big as Ishvara, that's what it means, really, because all experience is coming into the self. That's what the whole creation is. The whole creation has no ajnanam mediary, you know, that has something to say about everything and thinks it should be like this or should be like that. It doesn't care at all. You know, it's just Ishvara is an expression of me. That's all. It's an expression of the self. And the self doesn't have anything to say. It simply is the truth of the whole thing. And so as you gain some clarity, that's why, like, when you're with somebody like Swamiji, you're only with the self when you're with him. Mm-hmm. That's it. You're only with the self. There's no... The buddhi is just functioning objectively. It's functioning objectively to take care of business and do the things that would be helpful and all of that. But there's no one there except for you, except for the self. You know, and so you feel that abhayam is completely there. Abhayam. Because yourself, just like when you're sitting, you know, in contemplation or just now at this moment with your own being, it's not afraid of anything, nor does it have in any way, any capacity to evoke fear. It cannot do that. It's not its nature. And so when you're with a jnani who has that depth of maturity, there is nothing inside to evoke fear. It's just not there. Because the experiences are coming only to me, not to an ahankara that, you know, or is still needing this, needing that, and needing that. So that's the beautiful thing. When you're with someone like Swamiji, you just feel he knows you better than you know yourself. He's more on your side than you're on your side. You know, because there's no pushback. Once he said, I'm a screwless screw. Because somebody was talking about how people are taking advantage of him or trying to screw him, you know. Somebody was talking to him like that. It was in a satsang. They're trying to screw you, Swamiji. They said, somebody said that. Westerner said it. I remember, but I don't remember who. And he said, no, I'm a screwless screw. Nothing will happen. You know? It's all stripped, so you're screw, 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 but nothing happens. Yeah. Anyway. So, actually, you know, this little logic he has here is, when you think about it, the truth of it is obvious, but it has repercussions. I mean, when you really start thinking about what all of that means, you know. So when he says that your love, your prema, your love, your attachment for another person, anyatra, it's always for the sake of yourself. That love can go away if they don't continue to create a shantavritti in you. Not that the love goes away, but we say, well, I love that person, that's why I'm so hurt. That's why I'm so devastated. You know, all of these type of things, because it evokes all of these type of emotions. So that's just a psychological sophistication, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like the other side of love. The other side of love is hurt and devastation and all of these type of things. So
that's just an angry reaction to the shanti vichy being removed at the moment.
Exactly. That's what it is. Yeah.
Because you're hooked onto it, because you think the source of your shanti is outside.
Exactly, that person, you don't even think of it as a shantadipi.
No.
But if we break it down, that's exactly what it is. Yeah. So my attachment, my prema for that person is for the sake of myself. You know? And what would happen to me if I were without that person also, you know? Mm-hmm. Even when they're hurting me, I still love that person because what would happen to me? Mm-hmm. It would be so much worse if I lost them, you know? My mother once said she had 6 kids, if you can imagine, having to cook and take care of 6 kids. And sometimes my parents would get into arguments. She told me this much later because they didn't argue among themselves in front of the kids. You know, so, but sometimes they would have arguments, and a couple of times they almost decided just to split up. And she almost left one time because it was just too hard, too difficult. And she just sat herself down. She told me the story. She just sat herself down and said, okay, what is best for me? Will I be better off with him, or will I be better off without him? And then she thought, I can't take care of these kids by myself. Mm-hmm. I need him. You have to work it out. Mm-hmm. It's better for me to stay. Yeah? Mm-hmm. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. It's better for me to stay. No matter what type of temper he had or anything, he wasn't physically abusive or anything, but just, you know, temperamental and all of that. Not very pleasant much of the time, but... Yeah, she was better off with him. So, that's how it is. Doesn't work the other way. You never even think about it the other way. He says, it's not in this manner that the love for yourself is for the sake of another. Mm. Right? That's not... It's not.
Yeah.
No. He doesn't. No, not how it is. It's not just... It's not in the logic. It's not in the system. Doesn't happen. So therefore, it's this ananda for the self is paramam. Thinking of that, then the parama anandata belongs to the self, not to anything else. Because what you love is what makes you happy. You don't love what makes you sad. And so therefore, where is the supreme ananda? Where is that supreme happiness, ananda? It has to be with the self. Because there is nothing loved more than the self. That's the logic, see? It's nice. So,
that's like loving to go to temple.
Yeah. Yeah, because the temple, going to the temple brings that absorption and anandavritti and that sharanagati. Yeah, it does, it's true. There's another beautiful thing about... when you're going to the temple, if you have some knowledge,
The
murtis are sitting in an absorbed state, in a meditative state, you know, whether it's Ganesha or Dakshinamurti, Shivalinga, you have to understand differently. The Gangeshwari, the Jnaneshwari is standing, but in a very beautiful, peaceful state. All of them, and we are saying pujas, we're saying chants, doing rituals to all of them who are sitting in these states, right? All of them are contemplating on me. They're all absorbed in the self. They're all absorbed in my being. And we are doing rituals and doing all honor. We're doing all honor to these devatas or to these murtis that are in deep contemplation upon who? On the Atma, which is myself, and then all beings in the whole Hindu in India, you know, we all are worshipping that devata or deity who is contemplating on myself. Yeah, there's nothing higher, there's nothing more. That's the idea. It's beautiful. It's nice to sit there when everybody is with the two sisters chanting. They chant so beautifully.
Such a different concept than going to worship God to get stuff from them. I mean, the Vedas is full of that, so it's not bad, but it's a very different...
This is very different, because now, for the mumukshu, it's all about gaining knowledge of Bhagavan.
So when we say the deity, the deity, the Murti is absorbed in his own being, which is my own
being. Which is yourself.
And that's why there's a very strong attachment to that, or a love to be in that circumstance.
Yeah. And that's what we honor and what we do puja to and prayers to. Mm. And that's why also, like all of the chants that we're learning, it's so nice when you start to understand the meaning. Mm-hmm. You know, the meaning, and these chants have been done for tens of thousands of years. They're Vedic. You know, so it's amazing to actually be able to chant them and to know what they mean.
And it's funny, I've never had that experience with other temples. I haven't had the enough knowledge in myself to bring to that temple to feel such a good sense of well-being.
Yeah, though you probably could now.
I don't know. The Anakati is pretty special.
It is. Actually, Anakati is very special because they did everything perfectly. Mm-hmm. Even the placement of all of the deities, all of the ways that it was done. They followed the Shastra completely. And so, and then every day, it's a full, these full pujas are done. All the way through the day, everything that's to be done has been done, and it's done year after year after year after year. So now, people from all over India make pilgrimages to that temple and have rituals and, you know, rituals done for them, you know, pujas done for them there at that temple. You can tell when you're there also. Mm-hmm. It is a special temple, no question about it. And it has that reputation now too.
And it seems like the more clarity you have, the more you like the temple. I mean, it builds on itself.
Even Swamiji, when he recently, what was it? Not Shivaratri, but it was a special, one of those big days.
Yeah.
I forget which one. But not too long ago, he was up at the temple. They helped him to get, this wasn't just 2 days ago, this was a month or so ago. He went up to the temple and he was sitting there and they were doing, it was a big day and they were doing all the rituals and pujas. He was kind of sitting there crying, you know, just in tears of whatever, but saying, this is the last, if it was Shivaratri, I'll pretend it was.
Yeah.
This is the last Shivaratri I'll ever see. So it's just an emotion. You know, the last Shivaratri I'll ever see. Because it's so beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Amazing beauty and that bhavana is there. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah.
And it's your own being.
Yeah. But just that, also just when you think that the whole Vedic culture is all really around self-knowledge, that's its core. Mm-hmm. All dharma, everything is to really resolve in mumukshutvam. Mm-hmm. Everything. You know, the first part of the Vedas, becoming a dharmanishta is necessary for the antakarana shuddhi, necessary to have the space to do this inquiry in your mind, to have any interest in it. Mm-hmm. And so the second part of the Vedas really stands on the shoulders of the first part of the Vedas in terms of gaining that purity of mind that allows you to be available for this knowledge. Mm-hmm. So all of it is there. And then it's all true, like, for whether you have samsari or mumukshu or whatever, when you're chanting all of these chants, they take everything into account. Mm-hmm. All of the desires of the samsari are taken into account, all of the needs, all of the necessity of dharma, all of the mumukshutvam, everything. The whole gamut of all of the levels of all people are taken into account in all of these prayers. In all the ways Ishwara can be, how he can be Gora, or Goratara means, Gora means terribly frightening, or even Goratara, terribly frightening, or even more frightening than that. Yeah, that's what it says. Gora, or Goratara, Tara means more. It's frightening, or more frightening. The most frightening. Because look at the creation. And so always, Dharma is also viewed as, for us, as jivas. Dharma is so important to stay on the right side of Dharma, because Dharma is what protects you. Dharma is what protects you from the horrors, the godatara of adharma. You know, staying on the right side of the laws.
And I never really expected to have this sort of attraction to a temple. I mean, it was a surprise to me to see how I kind of, my heart kind of flourished there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. You never went to temple before.
No, I never, never.
Yeah, now you do.
Now I can't stay away. It's just, yeah.
Let's do another verse. We have a little bit more time. Itam sachit parananda, itam sachit parananda, atma yuktya tathavidam, atma yuktya tathavidam, param brahmatayos chaikyam, param brahmatayos chaikyam, shrutyante shupadishyate, shrutyante shupadishyate, itam sat chit paranandaha atma yuktya tathavidam param brahma tayos chaikyam shrutyanteshu upadishyate. This is winding up a section. So if you remember when we did the first verses, we went into showing the how the atma is really free from all states of experience, waking, dream, and deep sleep. So it's being, even though all the states of experience are time-bound, like the waking state is replaced by the dream state, is replaced by the deep sleep state, those are all time-bound experiences. The days are, one day replaces another day, another day. One month replaces another month, one yuga, another yuga, another yuga. One Mahayuga, what was that one? I just forgot the name of that. Kalpa. One kalpa replaces a kalpa. So these, even the most lengthy lengths of experience are time-bound. Everything has a birth and death. So the waking, dream, and deep sleep has birth, death, birth, death, birth, death. Birth, death means change, any change. Anything born comes to an end. So in all of our experiences, waking, dream, deep sleep, and also all of our experiences that exist within time itself, are subject to birth and death, birth and death, birth and death. But the Atma, yourself, the conscious being, is never replaced, right? It is the one, using the Anvayavyatireka logic, this is logic in Vedanta, this particular logic is key for all of your experience, actually. The Anvaya is, when this is, that is. The Vyatireka, when this is not, that is not. That shows relationship. But when that vyatireka is not there, there is no relationship. So if you say, when this is, that is, but when this is not, that still is, no relationship. The, no dependency. Because the one, it's just coincidental. The two are there at the same time. They coexist, but they have no relationship. Because when the one goes, the other still is. So this Anvayavyatireka is what, in the first verses, he was dealing with. When the waking state is, I am. When the dream state is, knocking off the waking state, I still am. When the deep sleep state is, knocking off the waking and the dream, I still am. That means I'm not dependent on these states of experience to be. And so me, the conscious being, is free from the states of experience that I experience. Then from there he went on to, when the day is, I am. When the day is replaced by the next day, I still am. When the month is, I am. When the month is replaced by the next month, I still am. And so now I'm looking in terms of just the waking state. My experiences, moment to moment to moment, negate each other. One moment is negated by the next, it's negated by the next, it's negated by the next. Nothing happens to me. That means one vritti, one thought is negated by the next thought, is negated by the next thought, is negated by the next thought. Nothing happens to me. So these are all just different, taking all different standpoints of time and change within duality, recognizing that I have what's called I forgot that word, let me tell you what it means in English. That doesn't matter. What it means is that I'm always self-reflective back onto me. When we have memory, when we're talking about memory, we're talking about memory of experiences we've had. But this is the pratyabhijna. Pratyabhijna means I had this experience, so I'm recognizing myself. I was here for this experience. I was here for this experience. I was here for this experience. You see what I mean? So now the memory is not here. It's the recognition of my presence in and through and being present to all of the memories, all of the experiences that I've had. So instead of when I remember this experience, this experience, this experience, that's memory. But recognizing that I was there for all of those experiences, that's pratyabhijna. Okay, so that's the same type of thing based on this anvayavyatireka logic. When this is, I am. When this is gone, I still am. It's huge. It's huge because just think of it, all you need to even do is just think of it in terms of experience. Don't worry at all about the reality of that experience. Like we're not talking about, we don't have to worry about matter, physical matter, anything, we'll get rid of that later. This is just your being. If your being can be without an experience of any kind, it can be an illusionary experience, it can be any experience, any vritti, any kind of experience, if your being can be without that experience, it is not intrinsic to you. You see? You see? If you can be without it, doesn't matter what it is, how real or unreal it is, it makes no difference. If you can be without it, it's not you. And that's also a key to helping you to zone in on yourself. Who is always here? What experience is always here? You know? Even in meditation, that's a good one. If you, who is the one that you can never get rid of in any way? It's important because you can get rid of bliss vrittis, you can get rid of, you know, all kinds of meditative states, magical states, powerful states, all of these things, but it's all maya because they change. They exist within time. You know, you're completely present, and this is another thing. You're not a knower because in deep sleep you get rid of knowership. So it's you're just conscious being. You're not bliss. You're not the bliss of a bliss vritti. You're the ananda, you're the wholeness that's there in a bliss vritti and in a dukkha vritti. That's the thing. If you can get rid of it, it's not you. Right? And so that's why Swamiji is all, students would always say to Swamiji, that, oh Swamiji, you know, I really understand, but when will my mind stop reacting because so much of the time I'm not able to recognize myself? Why they're saying that, is because they're looking for an experience of yourself in a vritti. But you're the one who lights up all vrittis. You know, so you don't need that. You're not going to get, that's not what it is. So anyway, so what this says, having gone through all this and now gone through this ananda part, he says, in this manner, the sat, chit, parananda, the atma, the sat, the being, the chit, the consciousness, and the ananda, parananda, means that the supreme ananda of the self which is sat, chit, parananda, by logic, in this manner, through logic, this Atma has been established as Satchitparananda, Satchitananda, by logic. Tathavidam, similar to this, Tathavidam, Param Brahma, that the Supreme Brahman, the Tayoscha Aikyam, and the Aikya of these two, right? The Aikya, the identity of these two, is what is Param Brahman and the Atma. So the identity of Param Brahma and the Atma of the first line, the identity of those two, Shruti Anteshu Upadishyate, means these have been taught, you know, these are this, in the last part of the Shruti, the Vedanta, first part is the Karmakanda, second part is the Vedanta, in the Vedanta, this is what has been taught. The recognition of the Satchit Parananda Atma and Parabrahman, the identity of the two. This is what is being taught. in the Vedanta. This is what is taught in the Vedanta. And so now he goes, as we'll see later, he goes on now to give a lot of logic establishing this even more. Because he's just now briefly gone through the Satchit Atma and given cursory logic to understand that. And now says this is what is taught in the Vedanta. Right? It's this that's taught in the Vedanta. And now he spends the early chapter one, teaching it in more detail, all of the logic and all of the things that you need to do to understand it. That's a good chapter.
Wow.
Om swasti prajapyah paripalayantam nyayena margena mahim mahishah go brahmanebhyah shubhamastu nityam loka samasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshatu parajanyah prithivi sasya shalini desho yam shobha rahitah Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kaschit dukkha bhak bhavet Asato ma sadgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya Mrityorma amritangamaya Om Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha Harihi Om.
Is this Vidyaranya?
Vidyaranya.
Yeah, is he held in the same esteem as Shankara? And
no, nobody's held in the same esteem as Shankara. He's a Shankaracharya and he's highly respected within the tradition. But nobody's... Shankaracharya is the main...
Adi Shankara.
Mm-hmm. Adi Shankara.
But I mean, it just seems good.
It is good. Panchadashi is good. It's a good text to study. Even though it has some parts that it's called you don't like. You know, those parts that the examples, when Vidyaranya sometimes uses his own examples, they're little complicated. No, they're not wrong, but you have to really think about it to try to get to what he actually is meaning.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah. They're creative, you know. Nothing wrong, it's just you have to think about it a lot to make it okay.
It's not as easy as snake rope, then.
No. Snake rope, clay pot, wave, ocean, tenth main story, space, sun. Space and sun are big. They're wonderful. We have all the water. Well, but just the sun, because the sun is self-luminous, self-shining, so you can use that, you know. Mm-hmm. Space is all-pervasive, and nothing touches it. Mm-hmm. So you use that, even though it's not the same, but still, it's powerful as a drishtanta to use these things. Then the water bucket story, you can never forget that.
Mm-hmm. So this last logic you just went through, seems like, I just had the thought that it seems like really a very direct repudiation or medicine for the essential problem of separation.
Yeah.
That is our problem.
Yeah. Absolutely, directly
to it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because there's no separation when you understand. Yeah. If this whole idea of separation is a totally illusory. Mm-hmm. Illusory, just like, that's why the dream exam, Drishtanta, is so good, because you can see that. But this is direct.
What separation?
Well, between yourself and Ananda needing to become happy, mm-hmm. you know, to become whole. That's just not true. You are the wholeness. It's the Ajnanam that keeps that illusion going. You know?
Yeah, an age-old problem. For all
beginningless.
Of us.
Yeah. Beginningless. Mm. Beginningless Ajnanam.
But not endingless.
Because it seems so real. I mean, if you can just get your setup perfect, all the right objects and relationships and everything, and then... they're happy.
Yes, and that never works.
And it never works.
But that is the key. Mm. At some point...
the sooner you realize it never works.
Yeah, at some point you have to realize that. Sooner the better.
But we all work like from that perspective. I mean,
until you realize, because you work from that perspective, but that perspective does not work. And at some point, instead of just going on to the next thing, oh, that didn't work, let me try this, you start realizing... none of them work. And you start realizing why.
Well, vairagya is an abandonment of that perspective, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It's a recognition.
It's like saying, I willfully let that...
But because...
I see it's not going to work.
Yeah. You see. But, and you see it's not your fault. That it's the very nature of things.
Yeah.
And so then there's nothing you can do.
You didn't fail at object alignment. It does not work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's also...
And then there's nothing you can do then.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's also this, it has this syndrome of, you know, you're the one sane person in this insane world, you know, I mean...
What do you mean, for a person who has knowledge?
Yeah, or has this as his pursuit, different than everybody else is going in this direction, and then you trip off the other way?
Yeah, that's why, it's unusual. This world's not meant for mumukshus and jnanis. That's what, like a chess game, it's the end game. We're in the end game. Mm.
Oh, this is the end game. Welcome to the end game.
End of suffering
game. The end of suffering game. It is kind of fun to look at it as a game. It's like you've finally worked your way through the maze of beginningless lifetimes. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah,
and there is a reward at the end.
So the case is then that, based on this verse 9 and so on, then about all love is for oneself. So there's really no such thing as selfless love that raises turn around. That's kind of a
not really.
The intention of it still.
Like, the intention is still there.
Right, that's still a good thing to. But
yeah, still dharma and all that. Technically,
it's not there.
Technically, yeah.
Well, what do they mean by selfless?
Well, they don't understand what the meaning. We don't know that there's a self. That the source of Ananda is the self. But in samsara, you learn really that dharma and giving love gives you more love than anything else.
Yeah.
And that's why we do it. You know. But we feel that that's a good thing to do. It's selfless love. And it takes some maturity to actually learn that. But what you do learn is that dharma and giving makes you happier than anything else. So again, it's just for the sake of yourself. Because if doing dharma and selfless love made you miserable, you wouldn't do it.
It's kind of a pun, really.
Well, would you say...
But it's hard for people to get there, to even discover that, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a big thing for people to discover, that to the point of actually doing it.
Yeah. Well, would you say that Swamiji has a selfless love? What that concept is supposed to point to?
Well, Swamiji has knowledge.
So he has love of the self. No, never mind. I don't like the term either.
It's not the right, we don't really use that term.
No, no.
But we use that term in samsara. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But what we're saying is that we use that term, but in fact, it's the same thing. Even being a dharmanishta, somebody who, it's really for the love of the self, because you recognize how happy that makes you.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm saying it takes a lot of maturity to even get there, yeah. You know?
It's just like each piece of knowledge cancels the other piece, but increases somehow. And
yeah.
Oh, doesn't it absolutely squeaking? Destroy and negate it, but still kind of cancels it.
Yeah.
It's interesting how that
Yeah, it's is. Interesting. But, you know, you even when they talk about saints, you talk about they, all they do is they give and they give and they give, and they own nothing. They're always so happy, you know. So we thought talk about that within samsara.
Like we're mystified by it.
Yeah, we're mystified.
So what are they getting back?
Yeah,
they're just giving.
Yeah,
but they're
and yet they're so happy.
Yeah, and yet, yeah, like they're not supposed to be.
Yeah,
but the happiness is from the giving.
Yeah, the happiness is from the giving. And slowly we figure that out. Within duality, we figure it out ourselves. And then that takes us closer and closer to mumukshutvam, because your mind has more space. You're not so encumbered by your likes and dislikes. Mm-hmm. And your need to acquire, you know, raga dvesha,